Chapter 22. Out of the Stone. It was a strange procession, Rand led out of the stone and eastward, with white clouds shading the midday sun and a breath of air stirring across the city. By his order, there had been no announcement, no proclamation, but slowly word spread of something. Citizens stopped whatever they were doing and ran for vantage points. The Aiel were marching through the city, marching out of the city. People who had not seen them come in the night, who had only half believed they were in the stone at all, increasingly lined the streets along the route, filled the windows, even climbed onto slate rooftops, straddling roof peaks and upturned corners. Murmurs ran as they counted the Aiel. These few hundred could never have taken the stone. The dragon banner still flew above the fortress. There must be yet thousands of Aiel in there, and the Lord Dragon. Rand rode easily in his shirt sleeves, sure none of the onlookers could take him for anyone out of the ordinary. An outlander, rich enough to ride, and on a superb dappled stallion, best of the Tyrant bloodstock. A rich man traveling in the oddest of odd company, but surely just another man for that. Not even the leader of this strange company. That title was surely assigned to Lan or Moraine, despite the fact that they rode some little distance behind him, directly ahead of the Aiel. The soft, odd susurration that accompanied his passing certainly rose for the Aiel, not him. These Tyrant folk might even take him for a groom riding his master's horse. Well, no, not that. Not out in front as he was. It was a fine day anyway. Not sweltering, merely warm. No one expected him to mete out justice or rule a nation. He could simply enjoy riding in anonymity, enjoy the rare breeze. For a time he could forget the feel of his heron-branded palms on the reins. For a little while longer, anyway, he thought. A little longer.
Rand, Egwene said, do you really think it was right to let the Aiel take all those things?
He looked around as she heeled her gray mare Mist up beside him. From somewhere she had gotten a dark green dress with narrow divided skirts, and a green velvet band held her hair at the nape of her neck. Moraine and Lan still hung back half a dozen strides, she on her white mare, in a full-skirted blue silk riding dress, slashed with green, her dark hair caught in a golden net. He, astride his great black war horse, in a color-shifting water's cloak that probably brought as many oohs and ahs as the Aiel. When the breeze stirred the cloak, shades of green and brown and gray rippled across it. When it hung still, it somehow seemed to fade into whatever was beyond it, so the eye appeared to be seeing through parts of Lan and his mount. It was not comfortable to look at. Matt was there too, slumped in his saddle and looking resigned, trying to keep apart from the warder and Aes Sedai. He had chosen a nondescript brown gelding, an animal he called Pips. It took a good eye to notice the deep chest and strong withers that promised blunt-nosed Pips could likely match Rand's stallion or Lan's for speed and endurance. Matt's decision to come had been a surprise. Rand still did not know why. Friendship, maybe. And then again, maybe not. Matt could be odd in what he did and why. Didn't your friend Avienda explain to you about the fifth? He asked.
She mentioned something, but... Rand, you don't think she... took things, too?
Behind Moraine and Lan, behind Matt, behind Ruark, at their head the Aiel walked in long lines to either side of loaded pack mules, rank on rank, four abreast. When Aiel took one of the holds of an enemy clan in the waist, by custom, or maybe law, Rand did not understand it exactly, they carried away one-fifth of all it contained, excepting only food. They had seen no reason not to treat the stone the same. Not that the mules held more than the barest fraction of a fifth of the stone's treasures. Ruark said greed had killed more men than steel. The wickerwork pack hampers, topped with rolled carpets and wall hangings, were lightly laden. Ahead lay an eventual hard crossing of the spine of the world, and then a far harder trek across the waste.
When do I tell them? He wondered. Soon now. It has to be soon.
Moraine would doubtless think it daring, a bold stroke. She might even approve. Maybe. She thought she knew his whole plan now, and made no bones of disapproving that. No doubt she wanted it over and done as soon as possible. But the Aiel?
What if they refuse? Well, if they refuse, they refuse. I have to do it. As for the fifth, he did not think it would have been possible to stop the Aiel from taking it, even had he wanted to, and he had not. They had earned their rewards, and he had no care to help Tyran lords keep what they had wrung from their people over generations. "I saw her showing Ruark a silver bull," he said aloud. From the way her sack clinked when she stuffed the bull in, there was more silver in there, or maybe gold. "Do you disapprove?" "No." She drew the word out slowly, with a touch of doubt, but then her voice firmed. "I just hadn't thought of her. The Tyrans would not have stopped at a fifth if the positions had been reversed. They'd have carted away whatever wasn't part of the stonework, and stolen all the carts to haul it. Just because a people's ways are different doesn't mean they are wrong, Rand. You should know that." He laughed softly. This was almost like old times. He ready to explain why and how she was wrong, and she snatching his position and tossing him his own unvoiced explanation at him. His stallion danced a few steps, catching his mood. He patted the dapple's arched neck. "A good day."
"That's a fine horse," she said. "What have you named him?"
"Jiaden," he said, cautiously, losing some of his good spirits. He was a little ashamed of the name, of his reasons for choosing it. One of his favorite books had always been The Travels of Jaehn Farstrider, and that great traveler had named his horse Jiaden, true finder in the old tongue, because the animal had always been able to find the way home. It would have been nice to think Jiaden might carry him home one day. Nice, but not likely. And he did not want anyone suspecting the cause for the name. Boyish fancies had no place in his life now. There was not much room for anything but what he had to do.
"A fine name," she said absently.
He knew she had read the book too, and half expected her to recognize the name. But she seemed to be mulling over something else, chewing her lower lip pensively. He was content with silence. The last dregs of the city gave way to country and pitiful scattered farms. Not even a conger or a coplin, two river folk notorious for laziness, among other things, would keep a place as run down and ramshackle as these rough stone houses, walls slanting as if about to topple over on the chickens scratching in the dirt. Sagging barns leaned against laurels or spice woods. Roofs of cracked and broken slates all looked as if they leaked. Goats bleated disconsolately in stone pens that might have been thrown together hastily that morning. Barefoot men and women hoed stoop-shouldered in unfenced fields, not looking up even when the large party was passing. Red beaks and thrushes warbling in the small thickets were not enough to lighten the feel of oppressive gloom.
"I have to do something about this. No, not now. First things first. I've done what I could for them in a few weeks. I can't do anything more now."
He tried not to look at the tumble-down farms. Were the olive groves in the south as bad? The people who worked those did not even own the land. It all belonged to high lords.
No. The breeze. Nice the way it cuts the heat. I can enjoy it a bit longer. I have to tell them soon now.
"Rand," Egwene said abruptly, "I want to talk to you."
Something serious by her expression, those big dark eyes fixed on him, held a light reminiscent of Nynaeve's when she was about to lecture.
"I want to talk about Elaine."
"What about her?" he asked warily. He touched his pouch where two letters crinkled against a small hard object. If they had not both been in the same elegantly flowing hand, he would not have believed they came from the same woman. And after all that kissing and snuggling, the High Lords were easier to understand than women.
"Why did you let her go in that way?"
Puzzled, he stared at her.
"She wanted to go. I'd have had to tie her up to stop her. Besides, she'll be safer in Tanchico than near me, or Matt, if we are going to attract bubbles of evil the way Moraine says. You would be too." "That isn't what I mean at all. Of course she wanted to go, and you had no right to stop her. But why didn't you tell her you wished she would stay?"
"She wanted to go," he repeated, and grew more confused when she rolled her eyes as if he were speaking gibberish. If he had no right to stop Elaine, and she wanted to go, Why was he supposed to try to talk her out of it? Especially when she was safer gone.
Moraine spoke right behind him.
Are you ready to tell me the next secret? It has been clear you were keeping something from me. At the least, I might be able to tell you if you are leading us over a cliff.
Rand sighed. He had not heard her and Lan closing up on him. And Matt as well, although still holding a distance between himself and the Aes Sedai. Matt's face was a study. Doubt and reluctance and grim determination all running across it by turns, especially when he glanced at Moraine. He never looked at her directly, only from the edge of his eye.
Are you sure you want to come, Matt? Rand asked.
Matt shrugged and affected a grin, not a very confident one.
Who could pass up a chance to see Bloody Roydian?
Egwene raised her eyebrows at him.
Oh, pardon my language, Aes Sedai. I've heard you say as bad and for less cause, I'll wager.
Egwene stared at him indignantly, but spots of color in her cheeks said he had scored a hit.
Be glad Matt is here, Moraine said to Rand,
her voice cool and not pleased.
You made a grave error letting Perrin run off, hiding his going from me. The world rests on your shoulders, but they must both support you, or you will fall, and the world with you.
Matt flinched, and Rand thought he very nearly turned his gelding and rode away on the spot.
I know my duty, he told her. And I know my fate, he thought.
But he did not say that aloud. He was not asking sympathy.
One of us had to go back, Moraine, and Perrin wanted to. You're willing to let anything go to save the world. I do what I have to.
The warder nodded, though he said nothing. Lan would not disagree with Moraine in front of others.
And the next secret, she said insistently.
She would not give up until she had ferreted it out, and he had no reason to keep it secret any longer. Not this part of it.
Portal stones, he said simply, if we are lucky.
Oh, light, Matt groaned. Bloody flaming light! Don't grimace at me, Egwene. Lucky? Isn't once enough, Rand? You almost killed us, remember? No, worse than killed. I would rather ride back to one of those farms and ask for a job slopping pigs the rest of my life.
You can go your own way if you want, Matt, Rand told him.
Moraine's calm face was a mask over fury, but he ignored the icy stare that tried to still his tongue. Even Lan looked disapproving, for all his hard face did not change very much. The warder believed in duty before anything else.
Rand would do his duty, but his friends?
He did not like making people do things. He would not do it to his friends. That much he could avoid, surely.
You've no reason to come to the waste.
Oh, yes, I do. At least, oh, burn me. I've one life to give away, don't I? Why not like this?
Matt laughed nervously and a bit wildly.
Bloody portal stones, light!
Rand frowned. He was the one they all said was supposed to go mad, but Matt was the one who seemed on the edge of it now.
Egwene blinked at Matt worriedly, but it was Rand she leaned toward. Rand, Varen Sedai told me a little about portal stones. She told me about the journey you took. Do you really mean to do this?
It's what I have to do, Egwene. He had to move quickly, and there was no quicker way than portal stones. Remnants of an age older than the Age of Legends. Even Aes Sedai of the Age of Legends had not understood them, it seemed. But there was no quicker way, if it worked the way he hoped.
Moraine had listened to the exchange patiently, especially to Matt's part of it, though Rand could not see why. Now she said, Varen also told me of your journey using portal stones. That was only a few people and horses, not hundreds.
And if you did not almost kill everyone, as Matt says, it yet sounded an experience no one would wish to repeat.
Nor did it turn out as you expected. It also required a great deal of the power. Almost enough to kill you, at least, Varen said. Even if you leave most of the Aiel behind, do you dare risk the attempt?
I have to, he said, feeling at his belt pouch, at the small hard shape behind the letters.
but she went right on as if he had not spoken. Are you even certain there is a portal stone in the waste? Varen certainly knows more of them than I, but I have never heard of one. If there is, will it place us any closer to Roydeon than we are right now? Some 600 years or so ago, he told her, a peddler tried to get a look at Roydeon. Another time it would have been a pleasure to be able to lecture her for a change. Not today. There was too much he did not know. This fellow apparently didn't see anything of it. He claimed to have seen a golden city up in the clouds, drifting over the mountains.
There are no cities in the waste, Lan said. In the clouds or on the ground. I've fought the Aiel. They have no cities.
Egwene nodded. Avienda told me she had never seen a city until she left the waste. Maybe so, Rand said, but the peddler also saw something sticking out of the side of one of those mountains. A portal stone. He described it perfectly. There isn't anything else like a portal stone. When I described one to the chief librarian in the stone, without naming what he was after, he did not add, he recognized it, even if he didn't know what it was, enough to show me 4 on an old map of Tyr.
4?
Moraine sounded startled.
All in Tyr?
Portal stones are not so common as that.
4,
Rand said definitely. The bony old librarian had been certain, even digging out a tattered yellowed manuscript telling of efforts to move the unknown artifacts of an earlier age to the great holding. Every attempt had failed, and the Tyrans had finally given up. That was confirmation to Rand. Portal stones resisted being moved. One lies not an hour's ride from where we are, he continued. The Aiel allowed the peddler to leave, since he was a peddler, with one of his mules and as much water as he could carry on his back. Somehow he made it as far as a steading in the spine of the world, where he met a man named Sauron Milo, who was writing a book called The Killers of the Black Veil. The librarian brought me a battered copy when I asked for books on the Aiel. Milo apparently based it all on Aiel who came to trade at the steading, and he got almost everything wrong anyway, according to Ruark. But a portal stone can't be anything but a portal stone. He had examined other maps and manuscripts, dozens of them, supposedly studying Tyr and its history, learning the land. No one could have had a clue what he intended before a few minutes ago. Moraine sniffed, and her white mare Aldib frisked a few steps, picking up her irritation.
A supposed story told by a supposed peddler who claimed to have seen a golden city floating in the clouds. Has Ruark seen this portal stone? He has actually been to Ruidian. Even if this peddler did go into the waste and did see a portal stone, it could have been anywhere. A man telling a story usually tries to better what really happened. A city floating in the clouds.
How do you know it doesn't? He said. Ruark had been willing to laugh at all the wrong things Milo had written about Aiel, but he had not been very forthcoming about Ruidian. No, more than that. Or less, rather. The Aielman had refused even to comment on the parts of the book supposedly about Ruidian. Ruidian in the lands of the Jen Aiel, the clan which is not. That was almost the extent of what Ruark would say about it. Ruidian was not to be spoken of. The Aes Sedai was not best pleased with his flippant remark, but he did not care. She had too many secrets herself, made him follow her on blind trust too often. Let it be her turn. She had to learn that he was not a puppet. I'll take her advice when I think it's right, but I won't dance on Tarvalin's strings again. He would die on his own terms. Egwene moved her gray horse closer, riding almost knee to knee with him.
Rand, do you really mean to risk our lives on a chance? Ruark did not tell you anything, did he? When I ask Avienda about Ruidian, she shuts up tight as a hickory nut.
Matt looked sick. Rand kept his face still, not letting his flash of shame show. He had not meant to frighten his friends.
There is a portal stone there, he maintained.
He rubbed the hard shape in his pouch again. This had to work. The librarian's maps had been old, but in a way, that was a help.
The grasslands they rode now had been forest when those maps were drawn, but few trees remained. Far scattered, scraggly copses of white oak and pine and maidenhair. Tall, solitary trees he did not recognize, with gnarled, spindly trunks. He could make out the shape of the land easily, hills shrouded mainly in high grass now. On the maps, two tall bent ridges, one close behind the other, had pointed to the cluster of round hills where the portal stone was. If the maps had been well made, if the librarian really had recognized his description, and the green diamond mark actually meant ancient ruins as he claimed. Why would he lie? I'm getting too suspicious. No, I have to be suspicious. As trusting as a viper and as cold. He did not like it, though. To the north, he could just make out hills with no trees at all, speckled with moving shapes that must be horses. The High Lord's herds grazing across the side of the old Ogier Grove. He hoped Perrin and Loyal had gotten away safely. Help them, Perrin, he thought. Help them somehow, because I can't. The Ogier Grove meant the folded ridges must be close, and soon he spotted them a little to the south, like two arrows, one inside the other, a few trees along the top making a thin line against the sky. Beyond, low round hills like grass-covered bubbles ran into one another. More hills than on the old map. Too many. For all the patch encompassed, less than a square mile. If they did not correspond to the map, which one held the portal stone on its side?
The Aiel have numbers, Lan said quietly, and sharp eyes.
With a nod of gratitude, Rand reined Geoden in, falling back to put the problem before Ruark. He only described the portal stone, not saying what it was. There would be time enough for that when it was found. He was good at keeping secrets now. Ruark probably had no idea what a portal stone was anyway. Few did except for Aes Sedai. He had not known until someone told him. Striding along beside the dapple stallion, the Aielman frowned slightly, as much as a worried grimace from most men, then nodded.
We can find this thing.
He raised his voice.
Aethondor, for Aldazar Din, Duwada Mahdi'in, for Darais Mai, Seyadun, Shamad Kanda.
As he called out, members of the named warrior societies trotted forward until a good quarter of the Aiel clustered around him and Rand. Red Shields, Brothers of the Eagle, Water Seekers, Maidens of the Spear, Black Eyes, Thunderwalkers. Rand picked out Egwene's friend, Avienda, a tall, pretty woman with a haughty, unsmiling stare. Maidens had guarded his door, but he did not think he had seen her before the Aiel gathered to leave the stone. She looked back at him, proud as a green-eyed hawk, then tossed her head and turned her attention to the clan chief. Well, I wanted to be ordinary again, he thought, a touch ruefully. The Aiel certainly gave him that. They offered even the clan chief only a respectful hearing, without any of the elaborate deference a lord would exact, and obedience that seemed between equals. He could hardly expect more for himself. Ruark gave instructions in few words, and the listening Aiel fanned out ahead in the patch of hills, running easily, some veiling themselves just in case. The rest waited, standing or squatting beside the loaded pack mules. They represented almost every clan, except the Djen Aiel, of course. Rand could not get it straight whether the Djen really existed or not, since the way the Aiel mentioned them, which they seldom did, it could be either way. Including some clans that had blood feuds, and others that often fought each other. He had learned that much about them. Not for the first time he wondered what had held them together so far. Was it just their prophecies of the stone falling, and the search for he who comes with the dawn?
More than that, Ruark said, and Rand realized he had spoken his thoughts aloud. Prophecy brought us over the Dragon Wall, and the name that is not spoken drew us to the Stone of Tyr.
The name he meant was People of the Dragon, a secret name for the Aiel. Only clan chiefs and wise ones knew or used it, apparently seldom, and only with each other.
For the rest, no one may shed the blood of another of the same society, of course. Yet mixing Sharad with Goshin, Tardad and Nakai with Shido, Even I might have danced the spears with the Shido if the wise ones had not made everyone who crossed the Dragon Wall swear water oath to treat any Aiel as of the same society on this side of the mountains. Even sneaking Shido. He shrugged slightly. You see, it is not easy, even for me.
These Shido are enemies of yours? Rand fumbled the name. In the stone, the Aiel had gone by societies, not clans.
We have avoided blood feud, Ruark said. But Tardad and Shido have never been friendly. The Tsepts sometimes raid each other, steal goats or cattle. But the oaths have held with us all against three blood feuds and a dozen old hatreds between clans or septs. It helps now that we journey toward Roydian, even if some will leave us before. None may shed the blood of one traveling to or from Roydian.
The Aielman looked up at Rand, face completely expressionless.
It may be that soon no one of us will shed another's blood.
It was impossible to say whether he found the prospect pleasing. An ululating cry came from one of the maidens, standing atop a hill and waving her arms over her head.
They have found your stone column, it seems, Ruark said.
Gathering her reins, Moraine gave Rand a level look as he rode past her, eagerly heeling Jotun to a gallop. Egwene reined her mare near to Matt, leaning from her saddle with a hand on the high pommel of his, to engage him in close conversation. She seemed to be trying to make him tell her something or admit something, and from the vehemence of Matt's gestures, he was either innocent as a babe or lying in his teeth. Flinging himself out of the saddle, Rand hurriedly climbed up the gentle slope to examine what the maiden, it was Avienda, had found half-buried in the ground and obscured by long grass. A weathered gray stone column at least 3 spans long and a pace thick. Strange symbols covered every exposed inch, each surrounded by a narrow line of markings he thought were writing. Even if he could have read the language, if it was one, the script, if that was what it was, had long since worn to illegibility. The symbols he could make out a little better. Some of them. Many might as well have been the marks of rain and wind. Pulling grass by the handful so he could see better, he glanced at Avienda. She had dropped her shufa around her shoulders, bearing short reddish hair, and was watching him with a flat, hard expression. You don't like me, he said. Why? There was one symbol he had to find, the only one he knew. Like you, she said. You may be he who comes with the dawn, a man of destiny. Who can like or dislike such? Besides, you walk free, a wetlander despite your face, yet going to Roydian for honor, while I... While you what? He asked when she stopped. He searched his way slowly upslope. Where was it? 2 parallel wavy lines crossed at an angle by an odd squiggle. Light, if it's buried, it'll take us hours to turn this over. Abruptly he laughed. Not hours. He could channel and lift the thing out of the ground. Or Moraine could, or Egwene. A portal stone might resist being moved, but surely they could move it that much. Channeling would not help him find the wavy lines, though. Only feeling his way along the stone would do that. Instead of answering, the Aiel woman squatted easily with her short spears across her knees. You have treated Elaine badly. I would not care, but Elaine is near sister to Egwene, who is my friend. Yet Egwene likes you still, so for her sake I will try. Still searching the thick column, he shook his head. Elaine again. Sometimes he thought women all belonged to a guild, the way craftsmen in cities did. Put a foot wrong with one, and the next 10 you met knew of it and disapproved. His fingers stopped, returned to the bit he had just examined. It was weathered almost beyond making out, but he was sure it was the wavy lines. They represented a portal stone on Toman Head, not in the waist, but they located what had been the base of the thing when it stood upright. Symbols at the top represented worlds, those at the bottom, portal stones. With a symbol from the top and one from the bottom, he could supposedly travel to a given portal stone in a given world. With just one from the bottom, he knew he could reach a portal stone in this world. The portal stone near Roydian, for instance.
if he knew the symbol for it. Now was when he needed luck, needed that Taviran tugging at chance to favor him. A hand reached over his shoulder, and Ruark said in a reluctant voice,
"These too are used for Raedion in old writings. Long ago, even the name was not written."
He traced two triangles, each surrounding what appeared to be forked lightnings, one pointing left, one right.
"Do you know what this is?" Rand asked.
The Aielman looked away.
"Burn me, Ruark, I have to know. I know you don't want to talk of it, but you have to tell me. Tell me, Ruark. Have you ever seen its like before?"
The other man took a deep breath before answering.
"I have seen its like."
Each word came as if dragged. "When a man goes to Roedion, wise ones and clansmen wait on the slopes of Cheyendare, near a stone like this." Avienda stood up and walked away stiffly. Ruark glanced after her, frowning.
"I know no more of it, Randalthor. May I never know shade if I do."
Rand traced the unreadable script surrounding the triangles. Which one? Only one would take him where he wanted to go. The second might land him on the other side of the world, or the bottom of the ocean. The rest of the Aiel had gathered at the foot of the hill with their pack mules. Moraine and the others dismounted and climbed the easy slope, leading their horses. Matt had Jaden, as well as his own brown gelding, keeping the stallion well away from Lan's Mondarb. The two stallions eyed one another fiercely now that they had no riders.
"You truly don't know what you are doing, do you?" Egwene protested. "Moraine, stop him! We can ride to Roedion. Why are you letting him go on with this? Why don't you say something?"
"What would you suggest I do?" the Aes Sedai said dryly. "I can hardly drag him away by his ear. We may be about to see how useful dreaming really is."
"Dreaming?" Egwene said sharply. "What does dreaming have to do with this?"
"Will you two be quiet?"
Rand made himself sound patient. "I am trying to decide."
Egwene stared at him indignantly. Moraine showed no emotion at all, but she watched intently.
"Do we have to do it this way?" Matt said. "What do you have against riding?"
Rand only looked at him, and he shrugged uncomfortably.
"Oh, burn me! If you're trying to decide..."
Taking both horses' reins in one hand, he dug a coin from his pocket, a gold Tarvalin mark, and sighed.
"It would be the same coin, wouldn't it?"
He rolled the coin across the backs of his fingers.
"I'm lucky sometimes, Rand. Let my luck choose. Head, the one that points to your right. Flame, the other. What do you say?"
"This is the most ridiculous..."
Egwene began, but Moraine silenced her with a touch on the arm. Rand nodded.
"Why not?"
Egwene muttered something. All he caught were men and boys, but it did not sound a compliment. The coin spun into the air off Matt's thumb, gleaming dully in the sun. At its peak, Matt snatched it back and slapped it down on the back of his other hand, then hesitated.
"It's a bloody thing to be trusting to the toss of a coin, Rand."
Rand laid his palm on one of the symbols without looking.
"This one," he said. "You chose this one."
Matt peeked at the coin and blinked.
"You're right. How did you know?"
"It has to work for me sooner or later." None of them understood, he could see that, but it did not matter. Lifting his hand, he looked at what he and Matt had picked. The triangle pointed left. The sun had slid down from its apex. He had to do this right. A mistake, and they could lose time, not gain it. That had to be the worst outcome. It had to be. Standing, he dug into his pouch and pulled out the small, hard object, a carving of shiny, dark green stone that fit easily into his hand. A round-faced, round-bodied man sitting cross-legged with a sword across his knees. He rubbed a thumb over the figure's bald head.
"Gather everyone close. Everyone. Ruark, have them bring those pack animals up here. Everyone has to be as close to me as possible."
"Why?"
the Aielman asked.
"We are going to Roedion."
Rand bounced the carving on his palm and bent to pat the portal stone.
"To Roedion. Right now."
Ruark gave him a long, flat look, then straightened, already calling to the other Aiel. Moraine took a step closer up the grassy slope.
"What is that?"
she asked curiously.
"An Ungrial," Rand said, turning it in his hand. "One that works for men. I found it in the Great Holding when I was hunting that doorway. It was the sword that made me pick it up, and then I knew. If you are wondering how I mean to channel enough of the power to take us all, Aiel, pack mules, and everybody and everything, this is it."
"Rand,"
Egwene said anxiously,
"I am sure you think you are doing what is best, but are you certain? Are you certain that Ungrial is strong enough? I can't even be sure it is one. I believe you if you say it is, but Ungrial vary, Rand. At least those that women can use do. Some are more potent than others, and size or shape is no guide."
"Of course I'm certain," he lied.
There had been no way to test it, not for this purpose. Not without letting half of Tyr know he was up to something. But he thought it would do. Just. And as small as it was, no one would know it was gone from the stone unless they decided to inventory the holding. Not likely that.
"You leave Kalendor behind and bring this," Moraine murmured. "You seem to have considerable knowledge of using portal stones. More than I would have thought."
"Varen told me a good bit," he said. Varen had. But it had been Lanfear who first explained them to him. He had known her as Selene then, but he did not intend explaining that to Moraine any more than he would tell her of the woman's offer of help. The Aes Sedai had taken the news of Lanfear's appearance too calmly, even for her. And she had that weighing look in her eyes, as if she had him on balance scales in her mind.
"Take a care, Randall Thor," she said in that icy, musical voice. "Any Tavirin shapes the pattern to one degree or another. But a Tavirin, such as you, might rip the age lace for all of time." He wished he knew what she was thinking. He wished he knew what she was planning.
The Aiel climbed the hill with their pack mules, covering the slope as they crowded close around him in the portal stone, crowding in shoulder to shoulder on everyone but Moraine and Egwene. Those two they left a little space. Ruark nodded at him as if saying, "It is done. It is in your hands now." Hefting the shiny green Ungrial, he thought of telling the Aiel to leave the animals, but there was the question of whether they would, and he wanted to arrive with all of them, with all feeling he had done well by them. Goodwill might be in short supply in the waste. They watched him with imperturbable faces. Some had veiled themselves, though. Matt, nervously rolling that Tarvalin mark across the backs of his fingers over and over, and Egwene, sweat beading on her face, were the only ones who seemed anxious. There was no point in waiting any longer. He had to move faster than anyone thought he could. He wrapped himself in the void and reached out for the true source, that sickly flickering light that was always there, just over his shoulder. The power filled him, breath of life, wind to uproot oaks, summer wind, sweetened with flowers, foul waftings from a midden heap. Floating in emptiness, he fixed the lightning-laced triangle before him and reached through the Ungrial, drew deeply on the raging torrent of Sidene. He had to carry them all. It had to work. Holding that symbol, he pulled at the one power, pulled it into him until he was sure he would burst. Pulled more. More. The world seemed to wink out of existence.